You are now listening to the Rogue Social Worker Podcast.
So I'm here with Chris, and he's a former staff person at a behavioral health facility, and he's going to share his experiences with us. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Yeah, I worked at this facility for a little over 10 years, started off doing transportation for the 7 years, and then went into more administration work, answering phones and filing. And
so were you transporting clients to and from the place where you worked?
Yeah. From the hospital back to the facility or out to other treatment centers or housing. Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I understood.
And then it went to, a lot of getting phone calls and transferring to administration or admissions or a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to see a little bit more because I was on the floor and going to the units more
than
I would as a driver.
Right.
I was dropping people off or picking them up and at one location in admissions and then leaving. So we had one employee who was a former client there. He was in and out of there the whole 7 years I was a driver. And then after he gained about a year or so sobriety, and they gave him a treatment assistant position. And, there are several people that are former addicts that work there. But this, he did have history of sexual assaults with women. And he would be dealing with female clients in, 18 up and up. It wasn't long before he started there that women were talking to me about it in the van, about getting advances at first, and then him actually coming in their room. He would do that late at night.
And doing?
Sit on their bed and be talking to them about recovery first, and you're doing great, and talking about their aftercare, and then he would caress their hair to try to help them fall asleep. And then, eventually get to caressing body parts or pulling out his own body part, his penis, and asking them to do things. So this, five different women came to me alone about that. But when the first girl mentioned it, I said, you need to report that right away. Because I wouldn't want this to happen to other women.
And you were a driver at that point.
And she said, at that time, I think it was just him coming in the room at night.
Mm-hmm.
And he had ran his fingers through her hair.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, no, I think he knew that was inappropriate. And he said that wouldn't happen. And I said she should still report it. But if anything happens like that again, or it happens to someone else, I'll report it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did happen again. And then other women were coming forward, and they said they did say something
to higher ups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To a counselor, but I also told my boss about it because just think, I thought somebody should know, because I had heard it from, by this time, at least three different women.
Yeah.
At different times. They weren't there at the same time.
Right.
So, and it was consistent.
Perpetrated by the same staff person.
Yeah, same staff
and
person.
And so you
always went late at night when everybody was in bed, and he would go into their rooms so he wouldn't be seen in the room, door shut mostly, just cracked. So.
And now you took this to your supervisor.
Yeah.
What did they say?
She said, well, you know, most of these women are whores and prostitutes and lie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So don't take it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
That was her response.
And you said, okay. And then, you know, obviously you can't, that's your boss.
Yeah.
So it's hard to argue with somebody who has power over you.
I said, although some of them may have done, you know, sold their bodies for drugs. It doesn't, that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's just, that's doesn't make it okay for him to do what he's doing. They're coming in here for help.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what their past history is.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's not an ex-girlfriend trying to get him in trouble that has a history with him. It's three different women that have never met him,
right,
saying the same things. Him coming in the room late at night with the door cracked, running through the, it's all the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all here at different times.
Right.
So that's, I think that it's, that needs to be brought some, you know, to the director's attention, and he needs to, you know,
right.
If you talk to about it and whatever, I mean, I'm not going
to. You weren't in a position to fire somebody, but you're trying to.
Something needs to be done about
yeah.
this. It needs, you know.
And so do you remember what, if she said anything? I mean, this was probably many years ago now.
Well, thanks for bringing it to my attention. She ended up saying at the end, but.
You don't think it went anywhere?
No.
How long do you remember if that staff person, that same staff person who was allegedly perpetrating this stuff, did he stay on staff?
Yeah, for a year more. Because this all happened in the first, not right away, pretty soon after he started there, within about 2 months of him starting there, and he was there a little over a year.
Wow. And you, obviously, you said you told as soon as you found out, which was right away.
Yeah, it was in that... You know, that second month, you know, after 8 weeks, yeah, within a few days of hearing these stories,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, right away.
And so, do you remember how he ended up leaving the facility or leaving the job?
Yeah, more and more reports were coming.
Oh, so that did end up.
That's what, they, yeah.
Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually. But if they had listened to you the first time and listened to those women who came forward the first time.
Yeah, it took actual him forcing them, not, you know, not penetrative, but literally him being on top of the girl and with his penis out and
right.
getting forceful with them.
Yeah.
It took a couple of different reports of that happening before... They finally,
right.
okay, well, and that, before they would, you know, let him go.
Oh, my God.
But this had been going on for a while.
So that was one instance
mm-hmm,
that.
That's one.
Now, we also had a, what was it, a male person in leadership?
Yeah, a male person in leadership, yes.
We can start from the beginning.
He's got years of experience in the field, and he's very good with people. He's compassionate and caring and knows a lot about substance abuse. He's the head, he's in charge of all the counselors. And does a lot of the groups.
No, at the time that you're talking about, did he always have this much power, or did he move up over the years?
No, he's moved up. He was lead counselor when I started, and
yeah.
then was... He didn't move up that much, but he was a counselor when I first started,
mm-hmm.
and then lead counselor, and then supervisor. Then he was supervising all the other counselors.
And now, how far is he from down from the CEO or the top, very top person?
Oh, just three. He's third.
He's third in line.
Third in line, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, third in line.
So yeah, start from the beginning with this guy.
Well, he's. he had a lot of pull with a certain other person there that was under him.
Another staff person.
Yeah.
Meaning, like he influenced that person, or what do you mean?
Yeah, there was an influence. And I think they just felt, because he had been there for so long and was good at what he did, that they were just going to kind of sweep things under the carpet when they would hear things.
Oh, so the person directly under him would hear things or witness things.
Oh, it wasn't. It was under him, over him.
Okay, so all sorts of staff members around him would witness him doing things.
Just getting very friendly with certain clients. Young, attractive males. Like young, you know, what you deem as an attractive young male, usually between 18 and 24 years old.
Yeah. And so when you say get friendly,
he would spend a lot more time with them than any other
clients
on the unit, whether they be male, older males or females.
Right.
He spent the majority of time with those guys.
Younger, attractive
And
men.
He would take those guys for rides. It's just the store to get cigarettes.
Alone?
Yeah. He would, you know, he would say, well, who else needs cigarettes? I'm going to, and Johnny will come for the ride. And there was a certain program where there were guys that could go out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
And even he did. He took other guys. But most of the time, it was those certain ones that were picked. And they would spend more time with him in the office. I don't know what, you know, if anything ever happened in the office there, but he just spent a lot of time.
And so what makes you say, so, okay, maybe somebody has favorites, maybe maybe they're unethical in that way, but is there something that made you think he was going too far, maybe physically or sexually or boundary-wise? What made you think that he was crossing a line apart from just having favorites?
He did it with me when I was there.
Do you want to share
and
what
was,
he did?
I was only there for a few days.
You were only there, meaning like you had just started on the job?
No. I'm talking about, I was there as a client.
Oh.
I didn't really think about this until
I didn't realize that now.
But yeah, I was there for 3 days and he was my counselor.
Oh my God.
So we talked about aftercare, but he mentioned how I was very attractive in that session. That, you know, you got a lot to live for. You know how people say that. You know, you got a lot to live, you're a good looking person. But he brushed my face and said, you're a really cute kid. And that's the thing that he was. And grab my face.
And you were in that age range at that time.
Yeah, I was 26, but looked.
I mean, you
younger.
Look younger, yeah.
I was 26 and looked 20, 19, you know. So yeah, I was in that range. He was at that time probably late 40s at least.
I'm sorry.
And he had invited me to come down to his house if I needed help, where he lived, and his phone number, his personal cell phone number.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
What did you, how did you feel? How did you react when that came up, when he said that stuff, and you're in a vulnerable place, I'm sure?
Yeah, I felt just really used. Like he's putting on this facade, he doesn't give a shit, really. Or he has some kind of a addiction himself that he can't control. But at that time, I just thought, you know, give a shit. You're here to be a predator, to get young males, to get them to confide in you and trust in you. And then, and there were a couple of males that shared that in the van with me, just two. But
what did they share with you in the van?
The same. What had happened to them,
but they had the offer.
And it was the same with me, and I was there briefer, but these guys were there several times,
mm-hmm.
and had, so they were with him for longer periods.
Right.
But one of them had made a stop to get cigarettes, but his house is not that far, and they stopped there, and he gave him a drink, and started to get touchy feely with him.
So someone reported to you in the van while you were transporting them that this other staff person that we've just been talking about had given him a ride to go to the store. Am I following this?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And he got him a drink meaning not
like
alcohol.
Ice, okay. Like water, okay, or juice, okay. Edis, whatever.
I mean, not that any of this is okay, but I was like, is he giving him alcohol on top of this?
Non-alcoholic.
But he, so he took him to the store and then keep going, sorry.
No, he said the same thing as he said to me,
okay.
Where he has, you know, they gave him the cell phone number.
You're a good-looking kid.
Yeah, and if you ever want to come down, you know, Jesus. You can spend some time here if you're in a jam. But he was rubbing his head too while he was saying it. I mean, he did go back. He was at a treatment center near his house, and this counselor also worked at this facility as a counselor.
Wait, so say that again. You said
facilities.
He did go back. What do you mean? Who
to
did?
His house? He ended up going to his house.
Oh, the client did.
After but he was his counselor at this other facility, a longer term facility.
Wait, so just break that down for me because I'm not following.
Okay. The counselor.
The counselor that we've been talking about.
That we've been talking about also worked at a year long facility, where this gentleman.
Where the same client that
yes.
we had just talked about in the car went to this other facility.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
And this counselor actually dropped him off there. And he had come to his house looking for help. He couldn't, he wasn't doing well in this program. He needed to get out. And he comforted him. But also ended up having sex with him. According to this guy. And this is someone that's still in a counseling role at this long-term facility.
Oh, he's in a leadership role, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's in a leadership role.
The top guy. Not the top, but he's in the...
Yeah, he's...
In a powerful position.
Yeah, he was even in a more powerful position at this long-term program than the one I worked at.
Right. Well, and now he's in. You said he's third down.
Oh, by now he might be... I don't know now. He might be first or second.
Right.
Because the director left that was there when I was there.
Wow.
He didn't end up going back to the long-term program. But the point was, when he came over to the counselor's house, he was in the program. He had come from there.
Right.
And he didn't want to go back.
Of course not.
I think that eventually he was talked to because that was heard a lot.
So it did become a rumor or a
spread
of it.
Nothing ever got done because that's just how he is. It's just how he is. He did have to go to a court and deal with another situation outside of there, though, for the same reason.
Wow.
Because he was caught masturbating in the gym, in the locker room.
At the treatment facility?
No, at a gym, a local gym that he used to go to.
Right, a workout. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was doing it. You don't do that.
It's, right, it's out in the gym. Open in the locker
room. In the open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where other people are around.
Well, with a young man, a very much younger guy, doing stuff with him. And so he He had to deal with that. But that was so, and everyone knew that.
Yeah.
That worked there. And he had a lot of accusations over the years from young guys, but nothing ever got done. And as far as I know, he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Years later, he's been there for when they first opened in like 96, so 21, 22 years he's been there.
So, okay. I'm so sorry that that happened to you. And I appreciate you sharing it. I know that's not easy. Okay. Did you want to talk about the counselor's attitudes about the clients?
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a pretty common thing.
Yeah. There were two in particular that were like that. I mean, there were one or two more that I would hear that from, but two in particular, it was constant. Clients would dread going back because they were going to be shamed.
Start from the beginning. I know I kicked it off by saying that because we talked about it earlier, but so say I'm somebody who knows nothing about the relationship between a counselor and a client.
Yeah, the counselor, they're there to guide the client, find some direction on, see where they're at. Not just with their addiction history. Well, they usually get their family history, their drug use or alcohol, and history with therapists or other mental health facilities to figure out an aftercare plan, like what's the best option for you once you leave here.
Right, because this is where you were was a short term, generally.
Yeah, very short.
A week or less, around a week, maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah, 1 to 2 weeks, but the counselors I'm referring to were mostly on the detox side, so they were generally 5 to 7 days there. So yeah, their job was to have a safe plan for them once they leave,
mm-hmm.
And to make them feel safe and comfortable and worth something,
mm-hmm.
you know. But many times, you know, in this field, people come back more than once. Most mm-hmm. times, people continue to come back and get help. And as the addiction gets worse, the relapses do. And
mm-hmm.
but fortunately, people do. They come back.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not a dead end, right? You've seen people get sober and get in recovery. Yeah.
Many.
In reality, in the world, this people do get better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, yeah, it's the statistics
some don't,
are low, but still.
What's your job?
I mean, that's your
job at the facility that you're talking about is, I mean, you describe it as, you know, trying to give people hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of how many times
mm-hmm.
they've been to get help.
Yeah.
Oh, so just wanted
to give them hope.
Yeah.
That hey, that this isn't the end of the road. This isn't you didn't fail because you're here. Because you're here, you're succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a huge leap to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because that's how it should be.
Yeah, ideally that's.
And but you saw with some of the counselors, you can if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, two in particular, when they would go into admissions and see that person, they would. Two things like shake their head.
A person you know, who's returned.
A person that's returned again. Just have that look of disdain and just shake their head.
Yep.
Or say, you're back again. Or why do you bother? I've witnessed it myself. myself because I bring them in to the admissions. And so I heard it all the time. Why do you bother? I was said a lot. I don't want to hear it. Like, hey, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear it. Just
degrading.
And I would talk to them about it. I'm like, what are you doing? Say, you don't understand. You're not a counselor. You got to deal with this day in and day out. You turn into me too. Like, well, then maybe it's time for you to leave the field. If this is, I mean, you're not, you're ill-equipped for this now. You can't, if you can't give these, continue to give these people hope and direction, and then you shouldn't be doing this.
Yep. And I guess an offshoot of that, you said you ran into these people the other day and some.
Yeah, two of them. Yeah.
And do you want to talk about what?
Yeah, I was at Walmart and they were at the checkout line. And they asked me if I had seen one of the other guys that I was supervising there is in transition from becoming a male to a female.
Yeah.
So they just I said, yeah, so I was going from to and just we're hysterically laughing. Can you see him with the dress on? And oh my God, just they were laughing so hard they couldn't stand up straight and drop their food on the floor. Just having a grand old time at shaming him for.
And this is another staff person that they're supposed to be working together with to help people.
Yes, yeah, he works there in the same capacity as the two counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I mean, especially now people are coming out more and more as trans and, mm-hmm. and they're transitioning and they're talking about the stuff. And especially when you're in a field working with, I mean, I think you probably are familiar with the statistics, you know, people who are trans have, you know, higher rates of addiction, suicide, mental health issues, and a detox is probably a place where you might find some people who are trans.
Yeah, there was usually almost always one on the
really?
Unit, and this is going back a few years.
Oh, so this isn't even.
So now I imagine you'd have two or three would be common if they had 40 to 50 clients in the facility to have one or two or three.
Right.
Definitely in the last, because this is three or more years ago.
Right.
We were having, most weeks we would have, not every week, but.
One person, two people.
At least one per month at least would come in.
Right.
And now I'm sure that's even, you know, triple that.
And what did you say when you ran into these counselors who were finding it so hilarious that somebody was transitioning? What did you say to these guys? Do you remember?
I said, what's so funny? I mean, I don't understand why you'd be laughing at shaming him. Oh, we're not shaming him. It's just, don't you get it? It's just like, it's just funny to think of him as a woman. You know, when you're used to seeing him, oh, forget it.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't get it. I understand. But I don't see why that's funny.
Yeah.
I don't.
And I think we had also talked about those, I don't know if it was those same counselors or other ones, but that would fabricate notes and documentation.
Yeah.
Tell me that story again, because I only heard it briefly. What you overheard, what you witnessed.
Yeah, if Again, it would be with clients that they were sick of seeing there, and they weren't going to take their suggestions anyway.
The clients wouldn't. The counselor said, "Oh,
so
they're not going
to
listen to us."
They gave up, but they'd have to write something. So they would just usually give them, "Here's a phone number for Kent House," or here's a meeting schedule.
Yeah.
Literally, they'll just hand them something like that. But then write a full page about their interaction.
Like a conversation that never happened.
I mean, because it would literally just be handing them a phone number.
Right.
Or a meeting schedule or a person's name to follow up with.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, we're talking about detox. We're talking about somebody who may have nothing to their name emotionally, physically, in terms of resources. They may have nothing.
Mm.
And this is their first interaction, possibly, with anybody who's in a helping profession. Detox is the very first place, isn't
right.
it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
That's a scary, it's a scary thought that that's your first interaction with people who are supposedly there to help you. Fabricating notes. Fabricating service documents, service records. And what about seeing a psychiatrist for psych meds? Because I know people can be vulnerable when they're just newly, I mean, because you're running around for possibly years with chemicals in your body, right? And then you come to detox and all of a sudden you have that chemical's gone. So what happens, you know, when people's brains, you know, they probably need to see somebody about, you know, taking care of maybe anxiety or depression or whatnot.
Yeah. And they're supposed to have the evaluation in that first 24 hours.
With the psychiatrist.
With the psychiatrist, yeah. And the medical doctor, which they usually did see the medical doctor. He would come in every day.
Mm-hmm.
The psychiatrist would be once for, not to say it was always happened, but many clients reported they didn't see the psychiatrist till the last day, just before they left. Quick 10-minute conversation, and then based on that 10-minute conversation, just write up a prescription.
So they had been there the whole time, sometimes 5 days, sometimes seven, sometimes 10, newly withdrawing from whatever chemical they'd been dependent on.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't see a psychiatrist until the very last day before they left.
Yeah, the psychiatrist would have all the information he needs in the notes from the counselors.
Oh, so they wouldn't even actually talk to the clients.
It would, they had to.
Right.
But it was so brief.
Yeah.
The way it's laid out when they first come in, when they have that initial group every morning, like you're gonna see a psychiatrist and you're gonna get a thorough evaluation. Just sit with him for about a half hour or so, 40 minutes, and go over your history and figure out what's best for you as far as medications, if that's what he deems necessary. But it's mostly, how are you feeling? It's like 10 minutes. How are you feeling compared to how you were last time you were here? Have the thoughts gotten any better? But sometimes it was just reading over the paperwork that the counselor wrote and like, yeah, well, I still think this medication will help, or let's up the dose and see if that works any better, or let's try this other medication.
Now, how do you know this? Did you witness this, or did the clients tell you about it, or?
Well, this client's telling me about it, but it's also hearing it.
Like in the next room.
Yeah.
Doors open.
Yeah, they use the office sometimes in the front where I worked.
Okay.
So I could hear it.
Could hear everything, yeah.
Yeah, and he would quickly be siphoning through people before. Like, okay, well, there's four leaving tomorrow, so You've got to see these four before you leave.
Oh my god.
Just anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. That was 10 mm-hmm. minutes would be the maximum. And it, there was only one psychiatrist. There's a lot of people to see.
Right. And they weren't even there full time, right?
No, no, no.
The doctors, yeah.
No. Usually
stopping in.
Couple hours.
Yeah.
A day, not even every day. It was like 2 or 3 days a week.
Right.
So how can you possibly accurately diagnose and assess, you know, the right medication for them?
So if you had, you know, if you were still working in that field and you could say anything to leadership, to the people who work directly with people, I mean, what would your message be to these people in power who are delivering these services?
That they're human beings. Why aren't we treating them like human beings? And doing what, just walking your talk that you have every morning about hope and doing whatever necessary to help you. Like, follow through on the plans that we have, like this book, and we have a vision, and like follow through on the work that you've laid out, like these people. Yeah. And
what happens if your staff doesn't fall in line with that, if they...
Well, there's 100 more in line.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of people that have applied there that seem mm-hmm. like great candidates to me. I'd see them come in.
Right.
I go over their references.
Right.
Said this is a great candidate.
Right.
And
how do those people get passed over when you have burnt out, jaded people working there? How do these other people that seem qualified, what do you think happens?
They're not good looking enough.
Really? Do you think that's the case?
I know for a fact.
Tell me.
The director, it was this, they had a skill set too. But anytime he could get these attractive women in, he would do that first.
Huh. That, really?
Oh, yeah, he would say. He's like, I'm definitely going to try to get her in.
Wow, and you knew what he meant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But checking them out when they came in. Say, get on her references first.
Wow.
Just thinking of this. I mean,
I know you probably haven't thought about it in years.
No, I haven't thought about it. I had no say. I had no power whatsoever. But I talked to these people, and I talked to their references, and I'm just good. I have good intuition,
mm-hmm.
and there are some great people that came in there,
mm-hmm.
I think that would have done well, that never got the opportunity. Because someone, maybe with the same degree, but way less experience, got the job because they were hotter than you were. Because you're a 48-year-old.
Right.
That's maybe only a 4 out of 10,
oh my
according
God.
To the director.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You give them numbers.
Wow, it's unbelievable. Now, this isn't the same director that we talked about before, the same person who with the male clients.
No.
Okay, this is a different person. These people are both in leadership positions.
Yeah, he's at the top. He's the director of the facility.
Oh, so he's number one.
Number one, the one I'm talking about now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fish rots at the head.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. So, well, there you go. You go to hire new people, and that doesn't even work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, he would look at, you know, the head counselor and be like, Who knows? I mean, I don't know much about. I hadn't didn't really hear anything about him with the females other than just staring at them like objects. I mean, that's you could see for yourself. I don't know about. He seemed pretty even on the time he spent with everybody, but he definitely objectified them.
Right. Wow.
Try to hide it, but you could see it. I mean, you could see it.
Right. So basically, you're you know, to end on a learning note, you know, treat people like humans.
Yeah.
Walk your talk.
Mm-hmm.
Walk the walk that you talk every day.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that's pretty simple. It's pretty, there are pretty obvious things that could be changed. It's not, doesn't take, a brain surgeon to,
respect, dignity,
basics.
Yeah. Helping people to find a safe place, regardless of whether you think they're going to come back or not. That doesn't, yeah. It shouldn't play into it. Addiction, it's progressive. It gets worse. A lot of people never get into a facility and they die.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to people that make it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see longer periods. Like they were coming every 2 weeks and then now it's like a month or 8 weeks or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it should be like, hey, you know what? You're here. You've actually gone 3 months or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big accomplishment. You were coming every 2 weeks, but instead, oh, man, oh, that sucks, huh? Fuck. 3 months, just threw it away.
Wow.
How does that feel?
Well, now it feels like shit.
Wow, I wasn't feeling too bad. I just,
wow.
Not to say it was every time with every client, but it was very regular. It was very regular, very regular, right. By several staff members, not, you know, treatment assistants that did the admissions, counselors.
It was a culture.
Cafeteria staff. It didn't, you know.
It was a culture. It was something one person said it and everybody said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
The head cook. Right. What are you doing back here? Again? Jesus. You must really like my food.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God!
Just
it's amazing
all around.
These people even stay alive to some of them to come back.
Oh, I can see why now. They had so much shame. They get in the van with their head down and think that I was going to say the same thing. I never did.
Right.
And they were grateful. I said, "Well, I appreciate it. At least you're giving me hope. You're treating me like a human."
Right.
Not garbage that's going to be a failure that can't do anything right.
Right.
You know.
Well, I'm glad you did that, and I'm grateful that you talked to me about this because it's important that we bring these things out into the light.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter who did it, doesn't matter what agency did it, because this is happening everywhere.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, if you have stories you would like to share, either of programs working well or programs working not so well, please email me at roguesocialworker@gmail.com. I'm also starting a YouTube channel called Rogue Social Worker TV, where we can hopefully discuss a lot of the same stuff and hopefully just provide another platform where we can have honest conversations about real-life human services and where we're headed as a community. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.